Ready, Dr. Murphy?
All right, everybody, let's start the meeting. Cell phones off or on vibrate. All right. Good evening. Call this meeting to order. This is a special meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Canutillo Independent School District. Today is February 24th, 2011. The time is 6:12 p.m. Tony, would you please call roll?
Mrs. Cousins?
Here.
Mr. Cardado?
Here.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Charles?
Here.
All right, and that takes us to agenda item two. Tony?
Item 2A, consider approval of 2010 district audited financials as presented by external auditors. Mrs. Aquino.
Martha, good evening.
Good evening, Board President, Board Members, Dr. Murphy. This evening, we will be presenting on the district's 2010 audited financials. With us this evening, we have auditors from Gibson, Webb, and Patterson, CPA firm. We've got Joanna Campos, Marlene Strickler, and Shelby Webb, and we will be doing the presentation.
Good evening. In front of you, I've passed out a few items that I'd like to go over with. Review. The first thing I was thinking about, unless you know you want to do it in a specific order, I was thinking about going over the graphs. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. The graphs are a picture of all the numbers, and sometimes it's easier to look at pictures than numbers, so we'll kind of like to start off with this. The first one is our comparison of district revenue. And as you'll see, the revenue for the district for this year did go up. As you're aware, you did have a decrease in the state funding, and that's the blue item. So that was down a little bit, but then, of course, with the ARRA money, that increased, and that gave you more federal money this year. And then the increase in property taxes, which is the burgundy, caused that to go up. So in total, there was an overall increase in district revenue. The bulk of all that is from the ARRA grants, which is in the yellow. Now, related to our expenditures that go along with our revenue on the next page, and I'm just highlighting the general fund because that's just your main operating fund, except for one of the ARRA grants, and that's the stimulus grant, and that's in the light blue. So if we were to combine our dark blue and our light blue, that is our instruction. And instruction went up about $1 million. That's mainly small increases, the step and stuff like that. The next color, the yellow, is our instructional and school leadership, and you'll see there was a very little increase in that area. Part of it was just a reclassification. High school allotment used to be separate, and now it's part of this fund, so it moved the expenses to a different column, basically. Our big increase is in a burgundy color, and that's our student support. Now, this includes like your cafeteria function. The buses that were purchased are in this area. The increase in transportation cost, a transportation supervisor, that's all in this area. So that's what caused that increase. Your green is your non-student and your community services. The main thing in there is your team's conversion. The cost associated with that goes in this category. So there's an increase there. You'll see admin and other very small increase for a total of about $48.2 million in expenditures for the general fund. Stimulus, I'm sorry. The next page is just a little new graph that we've started doing that kind of shows for every dollar that you get, where does it go in the general fund? That's a question some people want to know. Where's the money going? So this gives you your breakout. It's the same information on the other page, but broken out a different way. So 56 cents, or 57, I'm sorry, is for instruction. The school leadership is your 7 cents. Student support, 18 cents. Administration, 5 cents. And then indirect student services, 13 cents out of every dollar. The next one is a graph to show you your total expenditures per pupil. So we're using your ADA in the general fund and then the state revenue, how much you get per student. So the gap between them is where you're having to get your state and local, or not state, your local revenue or grants to make up the difference. The next one shows your ADA over time, and it, as you all already know, it's been growing a little bit each year, about a couple hundred. It looks like there wasn't much growth between 08 and 09, but about almost another 200 to 2010. The last one is on your general fund balance. Now you'll see the last 3 years it was going up. This year it did go down, and I know you all are aware of that. It was a difficult year, and we there was budget cuts that had to be done. And in conjunction with this, I do want to show you a graph or another page in the financial. The board budgeted a loss for the year, and so that's why, and we did have a loss. However, the good news is, if you'll look in your packet on, let me get the page on this exhibit, the G exhibit. Page 71. You'll see that the final budget for your general fund, there was budgeted a deficit of $1.1 million. But through the efforts of management and everyone, in the district, you'll see that it was only $743,000. So they came in well under budget of the deficit that was approved. So I did want to point that out.
This would look pretty
good. And it's in the second and third column. You'll see that about three or four lines up from the bottom. So I know that there were a lot of cost-cutting efforts done by the district, and this is where you can really see that what was put into place did help, because the loss was not as great as anticipated. Okay, next, if it's okay with you, I was going to go with a loose letter.
Mr. Chair, can I just ask a quick question?
Sure, Mr. Rodriguez.
Regarding the general fund expenditures, you have the $1.5 million under the fund 260, and that's the ARRA funding, is that correct?
Yes, that was the stimulus.
And don't we see that over 2 years? Is that 2011 we're going to be seeing it on the next report? So we didn't see none in 2009, right? Is that?
That wasn't available in 2009.
This fiscal year, the 2010, this fiscal year in 2009.
Yes.
Okay. And then that's it for right now, Mr.
Thank you.
Okay. The letter for the end of 2 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. First, I want to explain that the items in the back, that's where I was going to go straight to it, are our management suggestions. These are not findings, so I don't want you to be confused and say, oh, look at these, we got these findings. These are suggestions. As we do our audit, we see things that we think would help you. We want to give you these suggestions for you to consider. We think they'll help your controls, help the district, and they're not findings. They're suggestions for improvement, okay?
And where do those start? Sorry.
109.
On the letter?
On the letter document, yeah. It's, I think, the third from the back. The third page from the back.
Food service.
Prior year.
After that?
Yeah, I was just going to go over the current year.
Current year comments. Yes, okay. Sir. All right. Current year comments. Student attendance.
Yes, sir.
I thought you were talking on the main book.
Oh, no. It's the loose one.
Okay.
Did you want to go to the main book?
Well, that's page 109, right, where it would start on some of those.
Those are different.
Okay.
But I will go over those. Do you want me to go over those first?
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
So our current year comments, looking at student attendance, just having a couple more signatures on there gets you right where you're supposed to be. Cash receipts, we're just suggesting some procedures be adopted to make sure the campuses are only using one at a time and that we can keep track of them, that they're all being turned in. So just to tighten controls, a little improvement there. Under human resources, we're making a few suggestions as far as coding. We just need to make sure that if a code gets changed on a teacher, we've got it written down, the reason why, and it can be a paper trail is what we're looking for. And because people leave and, you know, somebody who knows what happened, they might not be with the district, and then somebody comes along and they can't follow what's going on. So just to make a better paper trail there. In addition, payroll withholdings, to make sure that those are being, for annuities and stuff like that, those are being sent in on a timely manner. I recognize that the district was trying to go through computer conversion during this time frame, and that is hard. It's always hard. So sometimes, you know, some things don't get done as often as you would like them to, but I'm just, you know, making sure that, okay, let's get back on track with that. Making sure the time cards get signed for the tutors. The person that needed to sign, it was signed. But let's just get that extra signature in. So as you'll see, these are just suggestions for improvement. The next one's on the investment. We need to make sure that what the board approves as far as investment pools, that it's stated clearly in the minutes so that we can look that up and it can be, you know, no question about it. The campus improvement plans. I do want to say last year, campus and district improvement plans, there was a finding on them. This year, we do not have a finding on the campus and district improvement plans. There have been numerous modifications made to them. We have a few more suggestions. The person that is in charge of that is already on this. She knows, I don't remember her name. She's aware of all these requirements, and she's working to get everything up to par so that there are no questions. So we just have a little suggestion here. Make sure you follow through on this. But I was pleased that it was no longer. Don't forget those little things here. Federal grants, all we're saying with the grants, sometimes they use different dates on them, so we just got to make sure that we start charging after that date that's given. There's one grant that had an unusual date. And so if you're used to doing it the regular way, then that one kind of creeps up on you. Capital assets, there are a few little inconsistencies, and we're just saying double check everything, make sure your tag number, your serial number, they get input correctly. I mean, you have a lot of assets, mistakes will happen. So, but when you're going through and doing an inventory, try to double check those things. And then on Title I, we have a suggestion here. On the allocation, when you allocate to your different campuses, you have to justify how you did it. And the person who was in charge of that, is my understanding, isn't here anymore, right? And so it wasn't clear the way it was done. We could see how it was, we could see that it was allocated, and that the 75% ones were served and everything, but to make sure that you're in compliance, we need to just document exactly how it was done, and then make sure, of course, the way we're doing it is in accordance with what you're allowed to do. Since the person was gone, it was hard to understand their methodology. Did anyone have any questions on these, or need me to elaborate anymore?
So Rodriguez?
On the investments, you're talking about when the board approves them, do they need to be visible in the minutes, or do they need to be part of the motion when approving?
Okay, it's not your quarterly report. Let me get to that one.
Number six.
You have to specifically list which pools that you are authorizing the district to invest in. And we cannot find where Lone Star was an approved one. We can find that document in the minutes.
From the past, or?
That has to be done annually, right, Kathy?
I know we joined Lone Star sometime back in the 90s. I have no idea. I didn't know how far to look back. I just could not find the documentation that shows that we put it to the board for you all to sign the resolution.
Okay, and I guess, do we have to do that yearly? Is that?
No.
So it's just when each pool was approved by the board, if another pool were to come in or another investment.
I just could not find the documentation for Lone Star.
Okay.
So like, you had a new in-text term added this year.
But not in the minutes? We weren't able to find anything back then?
I didn't even know how far back to go.
Okay.
So, like, just a small thing, but more, you know, I guess you could go ahead and do another board resolution and then make sure any new ones that it's in there.
That's it, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez. Anybody else? No? All right.
Okay. The next thing I was going to go over is in the big packet.
There's nothing else in the letter?
No, okay. I'll tell you what that is. The letter just tells you the estimates that are used by management. It says, it's a standard letter.
Okay.
So there weren't disagreements with management. You know, it's a standard letter. There's nothing else really in it.
Just a clarification as well. I know we received this. Is there a reason why we didn't get your all letterhead on what was sent to us the other night?
Sure. The very last item was pending, so it wasn't finalized. But getting the last one that we added on the title one, that wasn't on that copy because we were getting
the. So you went to the final draft to actually.
To put it on letterhead and sign it, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Is it okay if we move on to
yes,
the
next one? Yes, let's move on.
I wasn't going to specifically go over the first number, the numbers on the first pages, because they're the same thing that's in the draft. I just wanted to skip over and highlight a couple things for you. You mentioned page 109. Actually, if we go to page 111, we have four findings this year, which is a reduction from last year. So I do want you to know that. The first finding is not your fault about the collateralization. I just have to put it in here. If it's under collateralized, I'm required to put it in there. TEA makes us put it in there. But the bank has written the letters that we were at fault. It's, you know, it's their fault. Nothing to do with the district, but I still have to put it in here. So I put it in there. Number two and number three, I can explain what's going on. And what it is the projected numbers that were done a couple years ago for gifted and talented and for career and technology were higher than what was coming in. Well, finance knew that they were higher, so they would only budget, they would budget a reduced amount in those areas because they knew in the end they would have to give the money back. Once TEA updated their records, they say, hey, you were supposed to do this many students and you didn't, so give us the money back. So they budgeted based upon actual. Well, then, of course, the math doesn't come out right. You don't meet the percentage of funds spent. TEA says, I have to put this in there. They already know this because they can do this calculation themselves. The good thing that we did learn through this is I was able to talk to someone in state funding at TEA, and I gave his name and number to Martha. And he told her that to give him a call, and maybe there's something they can do to update the number a little bit earlier so that the funding is based more on actual. Downfall is, he said though, once he reduces the number, he can't increase it. So you just have to keep that in mind. You know, he can drop your number down, but he can't increase it until it's the next time for those to be reevaluated. So, I mean, those two findings TEA already knows, and they would end up reducing your funding in those areas either way. If you're not serving the number of students they're basing it on. But finance has already cut the spending in those areas down to a proportion related to the actual number of students.
To the chair, President, would you like Martha to address those two findings? Because she's been in and talked to me several times about those two findings. I don't know if you're
sure.
I was going to ask on just a clarification on that. So we're getting the funds from the state, and that our previous budgets have already decreased from what the revenues were coming in from the state?
Basically, what happens is that pupil projections are submitted every biennium. Like this January, I submitted for the next 2 years. If you recall from 2 years back, the projection was that we were going to have a great growth in the district. And so the projections that were submitted to TEA were considerably higher than what we actually have. Now, even though I've mentioned it many times, although we have the enrollment isn't actually the ADA that we're reporting. When we start doing our budget projections, we enter the information into a funding template that's provided by Region 13. And that's how we generate and populate the numbers based on our tax rate, our ADA percentages. You know, there's many columns that we fill out in regards to district information. Then, in turn, because of the biennial pupil projections that are submitted to TEA, we have a summary of finance. That's another website through TEA. In there, they have what they call the legislative projections and the district projections. And as the year transpires and PEAM's reporting goes in, those numbers start fluctuating. And if you recall last year when I mentioned to you that TEA was going to be recapturing $2.7 million of over-projected funds because of we didn't have the numbers. Well, in an effort to avoid that, that's when we said, okay, let's not budget for the full amount. Let's budget for what we know the kids are going to be here. So, you know, so based on our actual enrollment, that's how we budgeted, not on the state funding template. Because they will show there that, you know, whatever information we produced for the pupil projections, that's what they're going to fund us for. But at the end of the year, they have like the near final, and they just update that as we go throughout the year. We still don't have the final numbers for 09-10, but they're closer to being finalized now. So the funding fluctuates, and what I attempted to do is make sure that we stayed on the lower end of it, and of course then, you know, we didn't meet the required 55% that they want us to expend. But we meant that if we look at what we actually budgeted, we did meet it at that point. It's not what the state said we had under the summary of finance that created this situation. So now we're trying to figure out, you know, we're going to stabilize or find a happy medium between what the state says we're going to get and then what we actually have in projections so that we are able to meet this requirement without having to turn around and pay the state the following year, you know, amounts in the millions. Like I said, last year we were projected to return $2.7 million in addition to that $900,000 deficit for the salary increase we had given. And we actually managed to bring it down to where we were decreased only by $600,000 in fund balance. Because all those amounts were unbudgeted and would have gone, you know, hit the fund balance.
All right. Any questions?
I guess, Mr. Chair, if I can. On the ADA that we had gotten, that was a projected template from the state, so we were able to capture that amount from the state, and then they had to recapture it. My understanding here is that under this, we didn't use a state template, but our budget for that decreased within that fiscal year. And so the difference is the state funded, we had to recapture. Here, we set the budget lower on that. And so how did we actually look in case if it were to be a significant amount of money where that money could have been used for different programs since we actually...
But you can't use it for different programs. Basically, what I do is I leave that cushion because when the state turns around and says, we overpaid you by $1 million, then there's money there that the state said they're going to give us, but it's not budgeted. So basically, it won't affect the actual budget. Does that make sense?
Sort of.
In other words, we don't redirect the funds to use it in other areas because then ultimately we're going to end up, we're not going to be in compliance, but at the same time we're going to be over budget and the state, then we will be short funds to pay for what we adopt in the budget.
I'm just trying to see what would possibly be best practices instead of, you know, we want to project the amount of students, you know, to the most accurate need, but we don't want to under project and then not get that funding because the state is expecting us to just fund that when we know how the state is. So,
what we're going to attempt to do is look at our actual numbers enrolled and you know, our ADA percentages, and then what the state's giving us. And based on the number that the state says the allocation for specific, you know, GT program, then what we'll do is see that percentage and then, you know, hike up that program to make the state requirement of the 55%. But, you know, not on all the other.
Are we collecting interest on it, or?
No, because the state has a schedule of when we get it. And so it's at the tail end where the payments are then reduced.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Yes, Lori.
Is it getting, why, this is not like we needed more students to move into our district. This is the GT program. Why were not more children tested, identified, and placed?
Because it's, I couldn't really answer that right now.
Who can?
It would be in the midst of the year that we would do this, and I don't know what regulations are behind how we place students into the program.
Well, you test for GT.
Right.
And but, it would seem that we would open up.
If they begin the year, I'm not quite sure how that, I would have to look into see how the process is and whether or not we could. Do you have any knowledge?
I would go to the curriculum side.
Right. Ms. Fierro is traveling on school business today. She's not here tonight.
I'd sure like to know why she hasn't tested and placed more students in our program. It seems like that could sure service children with the money.
In this report, we're going to have some information on the GT enrollment, and we can certainly work on that. Of course, we're always working to identify students, especially in our underserved populations, for gifted and talented inclusion.
I would like to know the answer to that. Why didn't we just do the obvious test, identify, and gain more students?
I can tell you one problem with that. In the budget cuts, we did reduce in the area of GT last year in the $4 million reductions. We used to have one GT coordinator at every campus, so we had five at the elementary. Now we only have three that serve all five campuses. And one of the issues with that is just the caseload with GT that... And I'm not saying that we didn't test enough students. I'm just saying that is one of the factors that we did have some budget reductions in the area of GT. Also, special ed, we had reductions in that area, and bilingual education.
Anybody?
That's a good point that Mr. Earls brought up. My thing is this is different from the fiscal year from when we started the budget cuts to this year. And looking at how we need to address it, that might be something. I mean, what is the long-term, the long-term, not behavior, but what we're actually seeing within the amount of students? Have we seen a decline, or have we, and it's something that probably administration would need to look at just on that side if we need to code more students. We can't code them, but we need to identify and then see if we can identify more students for that, and I think that might be something that we need to look at, so that way we are not letting those funds go back to the state if that's the case.
Well, one of the things is whether we're estimating correctly, or two, whether we're testing enough, two separate issues. But I think it's probably a proper thing for us to take to the curriculum committee that's coming up, just to take a look at it.
We have 6% of our population is identified GT. The state average is 8%, so we're 2% down on GT. However, when you look at that number in correlation with the fact that our at-risk population is much higher, you're going to wind up with an under-identification in there, inherent to a district that has a high at-risk population. So although we do wish that we were at the perfect state average of 8, and we're going to continue working on it, it isn't that we're totally off the table. If the state average is 8, we're at 6.
The other question I have is, when are we permitted to amend our numbers? And
it's every 2 years, right before the legislative session begins.
And I understand the funding issues because of the biennium, but why, this is a yearly, the yearly issue that we have, why can't we not amend every year? I don't see the issue with that. maybe our auditors can tell us why we are not allowed to do that, as long as it doesn't go above the previous year.
The gentleman that I spoke with, and this was a brief conversation, mm-hmm. he said that he could lower them, but he can't raise them. So, you know, he needs something in writing, you know, for his trail.
Is that because of the projected budget amounts for them?
If you lower it, it's going to lower your projected budget for those categories.
All right, yes. And I understand that, and I don't think anybody's going to be right on the dot.
Exactly.
So my issue is, if we overestimate, there's got to be a certain threshold where if we overestimate by a certain percentage, as long as it's not beyond that, why we would have any finding? And is it measured in that manner or not?
I think that if, you know, you do like a trend analysis and everything, and maybe a couple of years ago when it was done, it just was too high. And so now we're seeing that, and now's the time, like, are your projections now going to be lower than what it is already? Projections for the next biennium. So they're going to be.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Through the chair, I have a question. So this issue that we've just been talking about, why is it two findings and not one?
It's two different programs. One has a 60% threshold and one has a 55. I probably could have put it all in one, made one real long one, but since the requirements were different, I put them, here's your 55% rule, here's your 60% rule. Okay, and then the last one has to do with last year there were a finding regarding the coding and allocations. It's been updated this year. Allocations, when we were checking those, we didn't have any exceptions. We just need to continue to work on the coding to make sure that the program that a person is being charged to, if you're being charged to state comp ed, that what you're doing for state comp ed is allowable and that you are working on state comp ed. Management has already started looking into this in August, but your year-end was August, so it's kind of I foresee this going away next year, but because of the timing of it, it got done at the end of this year. And then the next page on the federal award findings, this is on your federal grants. We didn't have any findings or question costs related to that. There was one there last year, but it went away. It's sitting here.
All right, board, any questions? All right,
last
one. I
do.
All right, Patsy.
I know that you went over the GT problem.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on the CAPE program?
It would be the same thing.
It's the same thing?
It's the same thing, just a different program. The projections were higher than actual, and finance management budgeted based upon closer to actual.
Mr. Chair, I've got a question, please. In reference to the CAPE program also, I noticed that on 113, that the effect in there equals we may eventually need to return a portion of the allotment to the TEA. The other one didn't say that. The one for GT did not indicate we would have to give it back. Just indicated we had spent it.
Well, you want to say the top of page 112.
Oh, I see it. Thank you. Okay.
And TEA does look at these on a 3-year average. Mm-hmm. So they don't just take 1 year at a time. So it's a 3-year average.
And, you know, I see that we're given quite a bit of leeway. I mean, so I think our numbers need to be better.
Well, yeah.
I would think that would be one of the big things, especially in the CAPE program. Mm-hmm.
In the projections and everything.
Yeah, well,
I think that since now is the time that those are being projected for the next 2 years, it should be better. I agree with you.
The number of students served in this.
Well, no, the projections we make.
Right.
We're not going to be on track all the time, and we don't want to underestimate either, because that's going to hurt us. But we're given quite a bit of leeway to be able to do that, so our numbers should be, our projections rather, should be better.
Right. My question is back to, though, it's not like we've got to come up with new bodies, Dr. Murphy. It sounds like we have bodies. We need to entice those bodies into our CATE program. That maybe there's not enough recruiting, as in the GT program, once again being done.
Well, even okay, but remember, this was all done deliberately. And even if we recruit more students into CATE and GT, we're still going to have to make a prediction about mm-hmm. the funding. And that's the bugaboo, is that it isn't the number of kids involved in CATE and GT, it's the prediction of the funding that we're going to need. And so even as we are more robust in our GT and CATE offerings, the business office is still going to be in the predicament of having to pick the right amount that solves these issues. And I think the auditors, and correct me if I'm wrong, auditors, you understand what was done and why it was done to avoid a payback that we didn't want to have happen. And we're going to have that issue again this time.
What I would like to add in the CATE program is, as we turned in our projections for this next biennium, our CATE numbers actually increased considerably, to where TA immediately called and said, are you sure? And so then, of course, I had to get with Ms. Brigham, and we had to provide information that they could, that proved that our numbers were true to what we're projecting. So they're watching them very closely, so we can't, you know, we just need to make sure that we're as close as possible. And I know that these projections submitted this time around are a little more conservative, so that we don't see that big fluctuation in funds, because, you know, returning $2.7 million. And basically what happens is that we return it because it never hits the bank. They basically just withhold from what they're going to send, right?
Ms. Aguirre, could we see those numbers on the increase?
Sure.
And what we've projected for? Thank you. Okay.
Sure. All right.
Mr. Chair?
Sir Rodriguez.
Just on that note, I would like to see both programs and see mm-hmm. the long term of it, 5 years behind, and see what the behavior has been on both GT and K. And I guess I have two questions. Just on that other stuff that we were talking about on our investment pools, the only one we were not able to find was Lone Star, but we have checks for all those other ones, Logic.
That's correct.
Okay, so it's just one that okay. And then on our fund balance, our policy states a month and a half, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Minimal.
Yeah.
And we have a 4.05?
That's correct.
Did that meet the threshold?
Yes, we're actually a little under 3 months, like 3 months and 2 weeks or so.
And I think we've talked about this in the past, and I think you might want to be a little bit more conservative and try to look at our policy, at least try to go to 2 months. It would be nice to have the 3 months in the operating, and of course right now it's kind of difficult because of the position we're in, but I would like to look at, you know, for sure not going below that threshold, but looking at increasing it in the long term. And I know we're going to be able to do that because we switched our fiscal year,
right.
So that's going to be a big benefit, but we have to look at that consistently.
In the next couple of weeks, I was going to be bringing to you the CE local revision, because it does state that we have a fiscal year beginning September 1, so we definitely need to update that. And so definitely we can make some recommendations and then see what you decide on, if we need to up the number of the dollar amounts that we need.
And maybe talking to our auditors or looking at some of the other districts. I know, Mr. Cornell, there's some districts that do percentage-wise compared to, like, saying 30% compared to, but looking at some other districts' policies, not necessarily within El Paso, but somewhere else, where that way when we look at that, we could have some information to look at as well.
Okay. And based on the actual current policy right now, we are both in compliance with both debt service fund balance and the general operating.
Through the chair, based on those percentages that Armando was talking about, the Budget Stakeholders Committee talked about a 20% threshold for the reserve fund, which is about $9 million. They were going right at that, what you were talking about. So that was the recommendation. Because they didn't want to get into weeks, and so they just said, well, what's the budget? $45 million? Well, let's get 20%, which would equal $9 million. And that was kind of their recommendation back last year.
So you're talking about the budget stakeholders?
Budget stakeholders committee.
Was 20%?
20%.
I would like to,
so we're only about 10%.
Maybe our auditors and our financial advisors see what benefits, because our bond rating, look at that, and, the better we are in that area, the more we're going to be able to save on interest when selling our bonds if we get upgraded. So.
Hi, Ms. Gonzalez.
Yes, I have some questions. Page 116 and 117 under responsible parties. I know that Martha Aguirre is the responsible party because she oversees the budget. But there's also some other executive directors that are also responsible for this program. So I think that they should also be listed here too.
Mm-hmm. And the only reason that I listed financial services was because of the actual budget projections and allocations are initiated with finance. And that is, I understand what you're saying. That is the only reason I considered putting executive director of finance, only because the budget is actually set in finance, and I was the one that, that we were monitoring and set it up. The program coordinators and directors wouldn't have played a role in the actual setting the amount that they need to budget in the budget.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Would you want us to change it?
I would like that because I know that you get the information with them, but I would like this to be a joint effort.
So are you requesting us add that to these two pages and then give you a replacement page?
I don't know what
it is. It's up to the board. Let me ask a question. Martha, you get the numbers directly from?
As far as the projections?
Yeah.
Yes.
From
PIMS, the PIMS reporting.
Okay. But who do you consult with in terms of doing that? Just yourselves, or do you take the curriculum people into account?
Well, the curriculum, the different programs are report to the PIMS, or the GAO. Mm-hmm. So basically at the point, I'm looking at prior year data when I'm projecting for the current year. So by the time I go to Leela for PIMS reports, it's because that's what's been submitted to TEA already. Those are the final numbers, and that's where I begin the process.
So it's in submissions based from each one of the program directors.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Well, maybe we need, like Ms. Gonzalez said, maybe we need to have a little more collaboration between them.
The only concern on that would should we do it now or how?
I don't think it's necessary that we do it now. I think we can leave it. This is just something that's either way, we're trying to just throw a dart to land somewhere where we're not going to be too short, and we've got pretty wide margin to be able to hit it, the way I see it. I mean, that's a pretty good wide margin we're given, so I don't think we should. All right. Board?
I'm good with that. I just had another question, Mr. Coronado.
Yes.
On page 67, the budget overage. Could you explain that, please?
You beat me. I was going there next.
Good.
Okay. I wanted to explain this because I think there was a little confusion. The first, there was a budget overage. Yeah. Y'all did your refunding. You were given preliminary documents, and we had to, based upon those documents, finance recorded the refunding transaction. Then, not until probably a few weeks ago, we got updated information, so it's after budgets have already been, approved and amended, that we needed to reclassify some of it from bond cost to interest. So we had to reclassify it, but we can't change the budget. But in total, it was already budgeted, but it moved from one line item to another. I didn't list it as a finding, it's easily explained. And the second one the new bond refunding issue had its very first payment in August 15th, 2010. The payment was made, but the budget was not amended to reflect this new payment because the budget was done at the beginning of the year based upon our payment schedule. So the second one is just, I mean, you approved the whole thing was approved by the board, the bond issue and everything. It just that one little thing didn't get amended before year end.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Just real quick on, I guess the concern I have, and I'm a little frustrated, but we've already purchased the system, and it's not human capital, it's, you know, the technology. What areas did you find a concern within the system that we purchased, teams?
Well, most of your teams came online after year end, so that would be looked at more in depth next year. We did look at just a little bit that was done, and what finance did, it was just payroll as far as what we were looking at. And finance double checked everything. We looked at their procedures and what they did to make sure that the runs were correct, and all that was recalculated. I could say that some districts that went sooner than you had difficulties.
And I guess the concern I have is, okay, if you were to find a finding and it's the technology's fault, or, you know, how does that finding get addressed? And how does it look?
That, you end up with a conference call sometimes with the attorney and the person representing the technology, and you have to say, this has got to be fixed. And we did have that happen, not here, but that has happened. I think, luckily for you, I hope that yours goes smoother because hopefully some bugs have gotten worked out before you all are getting it. But that could happen. I mean, I'm not saying it could happen for you, but if there are problems with computer conversions and the controls aren't working and things aren't running right and the system is doing weird stuff where you can't audit it or you can't follow the trail, then you could have problems, yes. But that's going to be more in your next year because you only did a couple of the payrolls starting in July and then August, but your main one started in September.
Right.
But they've been checking it, which is very time consuming.
Mr. Chair, I have another question.
Ms. Searles.
I don't know what page this is on. There's not a page number on what I'm looking at, but it runs in different places. It's in the budget, and it's congestion mitigation and air quality.
What is that?
Yeah.
That was the buses that you bought, and that was the grant money, and okay. That was what it was called.
Okay, good. Yeah, I can figure out who dirtied up our air.
The propane grant that we got.
Okay, good deal. Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay.
I have a question.
Patsy.
On page 109 and 110, the last statement on 110, that can't be a good thing, Ken. I mean, you're oddity qualified as low-risk oddity, no?
That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's a risk assessment that you look through for each district. And if you had a finding 1 year, you can't be called a low risk. It's that simple. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. We just have to identify whether it's a high risk or low risk audit. Well, a low risk or a higher risk audit. Thank you. If it's a low risk audit, you don't have to look at as many federal programs. If it's not, then you have to look at more. There's a threshold. So it's used in determining how much of your grant, how many dollar amounts of your grant that has to be looked at. So this is not really a deem on you. This just tells the TEA and like the data collection thing that we have to look at a higher dollar amount. So that when they check when we get audited, they're saying, okay, they're a low risk audity. Did you meet the threshold? Did you look at the right amount of grants.
Because you, because the previous year you found?
There was a fine. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that for that reason you had to look at us more in depth?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Dr. Chair, Murphy.
I would just like to ask your general observations about the Canateo audit.
Okay, sure. I think this past year that there was a lot put on the district. Many people were wearing many hats. There were a lot of vacancies, trying to do a computer conversion. And on top of that, we're changing our fiscal year. You guys have a lot of plates up in the air, and that just takes a lot of time. And so the audit takes longer. We have so many things going on. In addition, of course, finance, they want to make sure that they're giving us accurate information. They just don't want to throw something at us and, you know, make, and not have time to double check it. So the audit process is long. We did get the stuff we needed. You just have very busy people. And, you know, a lot of things going on at the district. This next year will probably be a busy year for you, too, because you still have the computer conversion and your fiscal year end change. So it's going to be a busy year. But we got all the stuff we needed. They answered all the questions, and they were thorough with them, and they got us in contact with the people who knew. They did an excellent job. They worked very, very hard because, you know, they still have the day-to-day operations to do. If there's a problem with payroll, we've got to run payroll. If there's a problem with AP, or it's time to do AP and get things ready for the board, those things don't stop when there's other things going on. So in light of all that, they worked very, very hard to get it done.
Or anybody else?
I have one more question.
Lori.
On the letter that you wrote, the small document, the last observation on Title I, and this is really not directed at you, it'd be to Dr. Murphy. Apparently, the position was unfilled for the person who did this. And so no one really knew what to do. Am I pretty much recapping?
I believe the person left who did it.
Okay, so the position was empty. Has the position been refilled?
Yes, it has. Now, when this budget was set, it was set not this last summer, but the summer before. I came on board at the point where I came on board in July as the external funding coordinator. Mr. Pesa was still the executive director of finance. The budget process had already begun months earlier, and the budget was set based on the information that Mr. Huesa had prepared. Mr. Lopez was the external funding coordinator prior to me being the external funding coordinator. He left in January. So between January and July, Mr. Huesa basically was taking care of the grants until July 1st when I came on board. And basically the first thing that I started processing was the application for the following year, but the budget had been already allocated based on, that's the information we could locate. I'm not sure how the funds were actually set up. I know that in this current year and moving forward, we have an actual schedule that based on economically disadvantaged students, we determine how much each campus receives. But at the point in 09, when I came on board, the budget was already set based on Mr. Reza's recommendation, I guess of prior years in the way Mr. Lopez and he set them up, but we didn't find any documents to support how the funds were set up.
When Martha was made interim executive director of financial services, we did not fill the external funding coordinator position while she served as interim. And while she was interim, she served as both. Then after she was made executive director, we still did not fill the external finance person for several months.
Till January.
And we actually had that recommendation in the Budget Stakeholders Committee last spring, that because she was familiar with both programs, that she would do both jobs until January to capture savings. And we captured half the savings in our finance department. Some of the concerns that have been voiced on board is personnel and finance. And we did not fill that position the entire first semester to capture those savings. And Martha took on that role as well. We finally did hire someone, started
January.
In January.
And now we have that position staffed. But it did go through about a 12-month flux where we captured that savings.
And what is the position called?
External Funding Coordinator.
And who is it filled with currently?
Her name is Ana Zuniga.
Okay, thank you.
And she's here. She was here.
She was here a few minutes ago.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? No?
Well, that was all I was going to go over. Unless you had any more questions for me. I do want to thank Finance. They worked very, very hard pulling their hairs out, trying to get everything we asked for. And I really think we ask a lot of questions, and we do, because that's our job. And I appreciate all their, you know, overtime that they put into it, and their desire to have a quality report and quality numbers and good information. I appreciate all that.
Well, thank you for your presentation, and thank you to GRP for the service you provide to us. Thank you, ladies, for all the work. And
President, through the chair, I also want to echo my thanks to our finance department. Everyone in the department really put in a lot of hours and overboard in getting all this done. Martha, thank you for your leadership in that area. I really appreciate it. She has my full support. And you know, I appreciate that we went down in findings from 7 to 4, and that of the 4 findings, 3 of them, well, one of them wasn't even our doing at all, and 2 of the others were simply a choice that we made on the on where to set the allocation, and so I see a lot of progress in those areas. I remember this meeting last year. This was one of my very first board meetings, and it was a much longer audit. A lot more contentious audit with 7 findings as opposed to these 4, and I appreciate the progress that we've made.
All right. Anybody else? All right. Thank you all again. Appreciate it. Huh?
I believe you need to
approve.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
Next month, right?
I'm sorry?
Next month?
That's a good idea.
All right. There being no other comments or questions on the presentation, I'll entertain a motion at this time to approve the 2010 District Audited Financials as presented by our external auditors.
Mr. Chair, I make a motion to approve the 2010 District Financial Audited Financials as presented by our external auditors.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion and a second on agenda item 2A. Do we have any further discussion or comments? All right, Tony?
Mrs. Cáceres?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Sarah?
Yes.
All right, thank you all again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, next agenda item, Tony.
Item 3 is the consent agenda for approval of a contract with INX for IT data center planning for the administration building in a total amount of $15,000. Award of RFP 1106, E-rate year 14 internet access in a total amount of $103,350 to Time Warner Telecommunications. Award of RFP 1107, E-rate year 14 telecommunications in a total amount of $402,164.64 to AT&T. Award of RFP 1108, E-rate year 14 internal connections. Administration would like to note that we request to remove project 5.2 from RFP 1108 for district-wide electronics. The total award amount is $3,110,452.84. And finally, award of RFP 1109, E-rate year 14, internal connections, basic maintenance, and the total amount of $323,156.60 for the award schedule included in the board packet.
All right. Before I entertain a motion on the consent agenda, would any of the board members like to pull any of the items for separate discussion?
I so move.
If not, then I'll entertain a motion.
I want to ask a question, but overall, it's not a separate one.
All right.
Okay.
Go ahead and...
Annette, Dr. Murphy, someone. In our bond issue, we have allocated money for technology, significant amounts. I see now we have our E-rate. Will that supplant what we have allocated?
Okay. What we did is we did put in the priority two funding. We have two tiers in E-rate. The priority one, which is our HAS two, that's the all the electronics, the AT&T, okay? That's the stuff that gets funded right away. Priority two is your district electronics, which is the other RFP. Those are the one-twos, okay? And we also have a two-for-five rule, which we can only ask for them for every second year in a five-year funding cycle. So since we were looking at a new school, and I really don't, you know, I remember crystal ball, what I thought we should do is put in all the new school electronics and wiring and cabling now, because then we'll only pay 12 cents on the dollar. So, I guess to answer your question, I put this in. Now, if the bond doesn't go through, what I have to do is something really easy, because this isn't, I don't have to come up with a budget for this until probably, well, priority one for the AT&T will have to come up July 1st. The priority two, I probably won't have to come up with a budget until probably October. So we'll know by then.
Okay, yeah.
And so
I got you.
But I had to weigh the odds, and I just felt if we could pay 12 cents on the dollar rather than the whole dollar.
Thank you, Annette. Good job. Yeah. And I have one other question. This is kind of a simpleton question, I guess, on my part. The $402,000 to AT&T, does that pay our monthly phone bills?
It pays if Project 11.06 is just the internet access, but that was Time Warner.
I think this one,
AT&T,
the 07.
Is RFP 1107.
Uh-huh.
We have a telecommunications services, the 800 number. And that's like the emergency numbers. That's for your, it's really used, but we're supposed to have it by law. The next RFP, which is the same RFP 1107, but it's 5.2, is your long distance. And that is absolutely what it's called. It's
okay.
Long distance. Now what is wonderful about this is priority one. We're still at 88%, 87 to 88%. So it's nice that we're only paying 12 to 13 cents on the dollar for our phone bill. And then the last one, well, there's two more. All that is the basic telephone, which is Project 5.4, which is what I think your question is. That is Project 5.4, Ms. Searles. And if you notice, it says telecommunication services and basic telephone service costs. POTS means plain old telephone, okay? That's a real life acronym. Okay, and that's our auxiliary services. That's what I call also, when I was principal, I used to call it my bat phone, because that's an analog phone.
Yes, but I understand.
All the other phones are digital, so they come to the district electronics. But we have to have analog, which is the bat phone for the campuses. It's your security services phone for... and it's the 911 service.
Okay.
So, and that's $112,000. And so that's the big bulk.
Okay. Thank you. That,
sure.
That did it for me. Thank you, Mr. Right. Coronado.
Thank you, Laura. All right. anybody else have any questions about? No? All right. Then we do have, did I hear it was a motion?
Mr. Chair.
From Mr. Rodriguez?
Yeah, yes. I did the motion. Go ahead and.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion and a second on the consent agenda. Tony.
Mrs. Casares?
Yes.
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Charles?
Yes.
All right, next agenda
Thank
item.
You very much.
Item 4 is our public hearing. This is a public hearing regarding the 2009-2010 Academic Excellence Indicator System. At the conclusion of the report, the public will be invited to provide comment regarding the accountability report. And and Mr. Warren will be presenting.
I'm going to start. President Coronado, board members, audience members, I am going to start and do the first 10 minutes or so of this presentation and then turn it over to Mr. Warren, who is going to be assisted by Ms. Brigham. I certainly appreciate the work that's gone into getting ready for this report, and especially Mr. Warren. He's done a fantastic job. He's new to the district. He's only been in the district, what, 3 months, give or take? And four, and he's getting his feet wet, and his big thing after he finishes tonight is the tax test. He's also our tax coordinator, and our first tax test is March 1st, and, so he has his plate full right now. I appreciate all he's doing for us. We did spend some time today going through the PowerPoint that was given to you in your board packet. We changed very little, but I did pass out a new PowerPoint, and it is, I promise, it's basically the same information with maybe just two or three little changes. And so I would encourage you to use the new PowerPoint that we gave you tonight, unless you've already marked up the old one. But they run very, very similar. And again, we went through it even today to make sure it was as perfect as we could make it. First thing that we need to report is that this is a public hearing and is open to public comment regarding our AEIS report after this meeting. It has been posted in the newspaper online, and as we go through this, we are following state law and federal law regarding this. We are doing a report to the board. There is the opportunity for public discussion, and the PowerPoint and the related documents will be as of, I think they are tonight or tomorrow morning, posted online on our website with a link off the front page. As well as two copies have already been placed at each campus. If there's any amendments, they'll be taken out there tomorrow, and copies to each leadership team member. So we're being as open and transparent as possible. Yes, Ms. Soros.
We get a school report card. Do they come out simultaneously, and have they been sent out?
The school report card, we have one that's posted already online, and then there's also the school report cards came out and had to go with the principals. I sent that out.
Okay.
The PDF and the letter to the parents.
Great, thank you.
One of the things that I really wanted to come up, and it became apparent as we were looking at this day today, that I wanted to talk about is the four overarching goals that we have between the board and the superintendent, which you're in the midst of taking a look at regarding my evaluation. We are talking most significantly about goals 2, 3, and 4. Because goal 1 has to do with scores that existed prior to my arrival, or at least to a large part prior to my arrival. But tonight, we get to finally take a look at goal 1, which is the tax AES overarching goal. And to be honest with you, my juices got flowing really good today in taking a look at our scores and where we are and what plans we have and where the deficiencies still exist and where the great gains are. And I think you're going to see there's a lot of areas in which the district was doing good last year even before my arrival. And there's a lot of really good news in this report. So first of all, these are the new slides that I threw in that you didn't have. This is this first part. And we've updated. When we got a hold of the final copies from the state, disaggregated them, put together the report, it became apparent that the board goals needed amended. And I'm not asking you tonight to amend the board goals. I'm going to bring that back to you. But between the preliminary scores and the final scores, a couple of the historical scores that we had on the board goals, and even some of our goals, it became very apparent that we're going to have to tweak them a little bit, because when the final scores came in, they were tweaked, and we have to respond to that. In fact, there's one situation where we've already met the goal that we set for this year last year, because when the final scores came in, they were better than what we thought they were going to be, and they actually exceeded to the point where they're to where we thought they'd be at the end of this year. So we're going to have to amend them, and I'm not going to belabor the point on this, but I did point that out. I also, in the interest of public disclosure, we did also find a mistake on the board superintendent goals that in an additional meeting we'll have to come back and change, and that is that we called the completion rate, we called the graduation rate the completion rate, and we had them backwards. We had we did not have the correct completion rate numbers. We had graduation rate, and we called it completion rate. And we fixed that, and we got the final results, and that is on here. So the results on these PowerPoint slides that you have are perfect and correct. Graduation rate was previously reported as completion rate. These numbers you've seen before, but you had them as completion rate. And then because we had thought that those were the completion rate, we actually did not have the correct completion rate numbers. So we posted those as well. And I apologize about that. That was the error of the cabinet and myself. It's my responsibility, but we're going to update that. It's really, other than a paperwork issue, it's no foul done to anyone. These were numbers that were set in August, and we're catching them now mid-year prior to any results from this year, so it doesn't really affect the performance of the goal. But that said, the other one is our scores, and we did get to update two scores due to preliminary versus final numbers, and they both are positive. Our math score actually grew by 1 point to 78%, up 6 points from 2 years ago, and our science score grew by 3 points. We already knew it was a great gain from 61 to, we thought, 72. We thought it was an 11-point gain. It turned out to be a 14-point gain in that it grew from 61 all the way to 75. So we're very pleased, and we think now that the 80% goal that we have set for this year is going to be very attainable, especially after we even got that little bump. So I wanted to just start and start this presentation by showing you that we have set goals in all these areas. The things that you're going to be hearing about tonight, the tax scores, the accountability ratings, completion rate, graduation rate, the GT, the CATE, those types of things. We have goals in all those areas. They're all found in the board superintendent goals that you're evaluating at this time and that we will continue to evaluate. And we look forward to this year's scores, as I certainly do, as I'll be here the full year and take full accountability for them. With that, I will stop. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Warren, who is going to do a great job and do the rest of the report with the assist from Ms. Brigham. Mr. Warren.
Thank you, President Coronado, board members, Dr. Murphy, and all the people in the audience. I know that I have to get that part out first, and I did. And can you hear me now?
Yes.
And my father used to say that he would swear that I was vaccinated with a phonograph needle, so usually I can talk ad nauseum, but I'm going to try to fit for today. I want to begin the presentation by discussing the data quality indicator, or the PID error rate, which is the Texas Education Agency Personal Identification Database number. And this represents our student's PIMS number, or student ID number, and how our kids tie into the state database. I thought I would start out with this slide, simply because it sets some nice groundwork to let you know that everything that's presented on the AIS report was first filtered through this. And according to this, for 2008 and 2009, we have been at 0.1% for a margin of error. And that is outstanding in itself. If you notice that the state is at was at 0.6% and then 0.5% in their error rate. And the acceptable margin of error for TA is at 1% or less. So that gives us some good groundwork to know where we're at. The next slide deals with the student demographics for the October 2009 year. While many of these numbers may not surprise the board, I would like to point out a few of the higher numbers between our discrepancy between what we have here at Kennedy 2 ISD and what the state has. If you'll notice, we have a 45% difference in Hispanic student population. We have a 17% higher population of economically disadvantaged students than the state. We have a 14% higher student population in LEP, and we're at 9% higher in the at-risk category of the students. So we have a very high at-risk population for our students, and this is, of course, no surprise to any of you. But I'd like to ask the board that you keep that in mind, because as I was going through these slides with Dr. Murphy, we still had smiles on our face, and we started to realize how well the students of Kennedy 2 ISD are truly doing. So I'd like to share that with you this evening. If we look at the bilingual ESL program enrollments, right, we have a 21% higher enrollment than the state. The state's at 16%. 2% less of gifted and talented students in the state, and 1% less special ed. However, we do have a 7% higher percentage point gain than the state in that career technology group. Now here comes the fun part that I was telling you about. On the slides and on the handouts that you have, you'll notice that I have put a base indicator. And that base indicator, this is the first of the three base indicators we'll be discussing. And the base indicators were used to determine the ratings under the 2009 accountability rating system by TEA. And so this is what we were talking about. While our scores still have a way to go to meet the state in most areas, I think it's important to note that we have some really nice increases that are either at the state level or above the state level. So as we take a look at this, we can look at our tax passing rate for reading 3 through 9 in ELA 10 and 11. We're at 86%. We're up 2 percentage points from the previous year. And for mathematics, we're at 78%, and we are up a whopping 9%. So that's fantastic. You'll notice that we outpaced the state there. In writing, 94%, we're up 1 percentage point equal to the state. In science, 75%, up 14%. That is huge. Look at that in comparison to the state's 5. Way to go, Canada. Social studies, 93%, up 4%. And one other thing I'd like to point out is if had this been the only indicator for Canada 2 ISD, then you would have been a recognized campus, because recognized is set at 75%. And you'll notice that you had 86% in reading, 78% in math, 94% in writing. Science, by that 14%, puts you right at the 75% mark, and then 93% for social studies. And that's keeping in mind that we have a high-risk population, completely different than the state. The next slide deals with, it represents the percentage of students who failed tax in 2009 that tried again in 2010 and passed. Again, look at the numbers. An increase of 14 percentage points from the previous year for reading ELA, and an increase of 15 percentage points in mathematics. Now, while we're still behind the state just a bit in math, we are above the state, 45%, and we're catching up in reading. As a matter of fact, that's double the increase of the state. Wow, okay. The next slide represents the commended performance, and that's the percentage of examinees that scored at or above the commended standard of 30% or more. We were evaluated on every group with the exception of the African American population. So we were 30 students and 10% of the population. And again, if you take a look at the commended performance, again, we reading population, we're a little bit behind the state, 25 to the 33%, but our increases are the same at plus 2%. Mathematics, 22% to the 29, but we actually surpassed the state in gains at 2%. Riding, 32% with an increase of 2. The state is at 33, so if they hold there, we go up another 2%, we'll be passed in this year. Science, 20% with a gain of 8 percentage points. Fantastic. Again, consider the high demographic that we have of high at-risk students. Social studies, 31%, another strong gain at 5%, for the state's at 47%. This slide represents the tax exit level cumulative pass rate difference between the class of 2009 and 2010. The cumulative pass rate for Canisteo ISD was at 86%. Okay, that was a gain of 13 percentage points. We're outpacing the state now by 9%. This might be partially attributed to targeted intervention that happened last year, and anything that was done at the end of the school year or over the summer period. The next slide deals with the Student Success Initiative. And this is the Student Success Initiative allows students in grades 5 and 8 to retest if they did not pass the tax during the first administration. Our gains are still very close with the state, with the exception of grade 5 math, where we were at 2% loss to the state. We were at 2% loss and a 2% gain, and the state was at a 6% gain. So we still need to work on that a bit. But between this point and this point here. But in grade 8 math, we outpaced the state again. We had a gain of about 10% versus the state's 7%. And I don't know if you're familiar with the SSI, but that's targeted intervention. So if the student fails, then what they do is they have, help me out, Dr. Murphy, the
remedial program.
Remedial programs, thank you, that they will take and try to push them forward so that they can. And we can see that it is quite effective. This is the second of the base educators, and this is the annual dropout rate. Now, this slide was updated from the previous packet that you all received from me, because this one shows grades 7 and 8, which is the true base indicator for the AIS report. But then there's grades 9 through 12, which is more in line with your board goals. The base indicator, number two, state sets acceptable rate at 1.8% or less, and we are at 1/6 of a percentage point. Again, if this was part of getting you guys to recognized, you're still under the 1.8%, so you would still be eligible for recognized according to this. How am I doing, Dr. Murphy? All right, throw a water over here, isn't it? Okay. Bear with me, board members, board president.
Doing fine.
I'm freaking.
You're doing fine. Just relax. Relax. Relax.
And I think if we get through this is probably the worst of all my slides, because even when I looked at it, I kept going cross-eyed, and then I was talking to Dr. Murphy, and I said, okay. So if we just take it slowly, we can see that for the class of 2009, we increased the graduation rate. It was increased by 5 percentage points, and it went to 71.2. Still a lag behind the state at 80.6, but notice that our increase is plus 5 and the state was only plus 2. Receiving GED, we're right on par with the state, but we're not really in the business of getting kids to a GED. So, continuation of high school. This represents students that were in their fourth year. They didn't graduate, but they came back again for the fifth year. Mm-hmm. We're at 7%, 9% for the state. Dropped out, this is the one that's, what can you say? We're at 21%. If I wanted to look for anything good in that, a glimmer of hope, we're down 1 percentage point. Completion rate with GED, that's 80% for us, 91% for the state. And then the third and final base indicator that determines your status for recognized and exemplary would be this completion rate without the GED. And there we're sitting at 78.2. We are up by 1 percentage point from last year.
And we still have a little ways to go there, too.
Chair.
Dr. Murphy.
Two notes about this slide, and this is the toughest slide on the whole thing. The dropout rate is not an indicator for accountability. It does not get us to recognize or not to recognize. It is the completion rate that does that at the bottom. The dropout rate sitting at 21% is over the 4 or actually even 5 years of study, going back all the way to, well, for this group, 2005 or even 2004. That the cohort that entered Canutillo High School in 2005, 21% of those individuals left school during the years 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009, at some standard. Although it does not look like a positive number, 21, and believe me, it's not. Historically, it has been much worse than that. That this is saying that 79% of that entering freshman class stays together and finishes together. And it has that, even though we're not to where the state is, we are definitely moving forward on that. The other point that I want to point out is the red note on the bottom left, and it's on your PowerPoint as well. He has shown that the first two base indicators we have met recognized. It's this third base indicator, completion rate, which kept us from being recognized this year. And what has to happen is that the 78.2 has to become, in June this year when the preliminary data show up, it has to become 82. So we have to gain 3.5 points. Now, I'm very optimistic about this, and we were sitting around talking, because if you think back to all the work that we did in the spring semester when I first arrived, over the summer to capture those dropout kids, the work that we did on September 21st with the district-wide dropout recovery day, that should bring that 78.2 to 82 and above. And when we get the report in June, we should have the recognized mark. It's very much my prediction that we'll hit that 82. So I was actually very excited to see this because, you know, this is a lagging indicator, because there's nothing I can do today to prepare kids to get that score. That score comes from last year, but we'll be accountable for it this year. It's one of those lagging indicators, and I think we've met our mark. So I'm very pleased with that.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Rodriguez.
Is this a new formula that the state adopted across school districts to be consistent about 2 years ago? Yeah.
This is in line with required improvement and
They had changed the formula, the way the dropout and the completion rate was going to be across the state, so it was...
I could look into that for you. I can't really speak to that right now, but I can verify for you if it's changed.
Okay. And I guess the ones that are on grade level within the 4 years are the ones graduated. Continued high school are the ones that go probably for the fifth year.
Yes, ma'am.
And from there, and then 1% GED. That's correct?
Yes, sir.
And this goal that we have, that's a goal that we have set in stone for your evaluation?
Yes.
So, okay, and that's also what the state is looking for, our accountability, correct?
It's actually, we actually verified it very closely today. The actual number is 81.6. If we hit 81.6 on the June preliminary score, we will be considered recognized. Now again, that goes back to last year, but that's the number we'll need in June. And so we rounded it to 82 for the goal. And if you'll remember, when we adopted the board superintendent goals, there was an asterisk on the items about completion rate and dropout rate, and said they might fluctuate with the final scores. And that's what's happened here. If I'm not mistaken, I think we set it for 80. And it's like 82.
And then the other thing, and on a side note, looking at, well, we could discuss that in the summer, on the grade level completion rates, but that's different. I'm done, Mr. Chair. Right.
Thank you. Mr. Warren?
Would you like me to continue?
Yeah, go ahead and continue.
The next slide deals with attendance rates. and it represents the total number of days present divided by the total number of days in membership for the student. We're at 95.2%, and the district just missed a gold performance acknowledgement by 1.8 of a percentage point. Because gold point GPA acknowledgement is at 96%. You guys are sitting at 95.2. So still doing really good. And this is where the slides were changed up just a little bit. Nothing of it's just the sequential order of the slides so that we could we've been comparing ourselves to the state, but as we discussed earlier, because of our demographic and because it's so different, we thought that it might be beneficial to at least compare ourselves in a slide to the regional area. So on the next slides, I'll cover all of the college readiness indicators. And let me see if I can go here. First one being advanced course and dual enrollment. These are competing courses in AP and dual enrollment. Completing courses in AP dual enrollment still are pretty close to the state. We're at 22% and the state's at 25%. Recommended high school graduation programs for the class of 2009, we were at 95% RHSP AP graduation plans. The state requirement is at 85% or more, so you received a gold performance acknowledgement for this because you surpassed the state by 10%. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Advanced placement represents 15% or more of the 11th and 12th graders taking at least one AP course on the top that was tested, and 50% or more of 11th and 12th grade examinees scoring at or above the criteria. That's the 33.9. Although we are lagging behind the state considerably in this area, at 33.9, we aren't too far back from what we represent here within the region at the 36.8%. So that's kind of the reason that we wanted to let you see it that way, because when you look at it against the state, it's not a true indicator of what it's like to live within this region. The college admissions testing, we need to have at least 70% of our grads taking the SAT or ACT, and 40% or more at or above the criterion. And we do have a projection of over 80% of the class of 2011 will be taking, or has taken, the SAT, ACT.
Mr. Chair, that is, of course, in goal one, the tax AEIS goal. And you saw in the paperwork on Tuesday night, we already know that 79% of the class of 2011 has taken, or at least enrolled in and shown up on the day. We hope they turned in the actual paper when they enrolled, taking the SAT, ACT. So we're going to be well on our way to our 100% goal. I don't know if we'll get to perfect 100, but we're certainly going to come really, really close. There's one more administration of the test left prior to the end of the year, and we have 15%, 20% of the senior class left, and we're trying to get them to take that last test.
So that is a great, great news.
That's great.
Yeah. But we're going to see a huge increase, 54, and we know we're going to be at least 80. At least.
But
we were passing out
vouchers
like crazy.
Ms.
Gonzalez? Mr. Warren, I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
I think you have to go back to slide two, and although I don't see it listed there, can you go back another one? No, right there. Go forward. You said distinguished achievement program of goal performance acknowledgement. I don't see anything listed for special ed. Was it addressed here, anything to that effect?
I'm sorry, you wanted it listed for special ed as well?
Because I know that on PBM, the PBM, is it listed here? Is it addressed here in the AIS report at all?
No.
In your presentation?
I didn't address that, but I can absolutely look it up for you, or in your updated board packet, I can get you whatever information you need.
PBMAS is different.
I know, but I know that it was listed here as distinguished achievement. But now I don't see anything listed under the PBNAS under special ed, so it's part of the AAS report too.
Special ed graduation rates?
Mm.
I don't think that, well, let's see, yeah, no, it is reported as special ed graduation rates. We can certainly get that for you.
Are you addressing just that it was in a certain percentage, like the 30 kids?
Well, I know that it is, like, for example, that one is an acknowledgement. And I know that the PBN on special ed is not even addressed here. So maybe you can bring us something to that effect on a Friday practice.
Okay.
Ms. Brigham, will you make a note that we need to show sub-pop graduation numbers in relation to our goal performance acknowledgement for DAP and recommended?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Let me see if I have something here for it. It might, but
I
think I would just rather wait.
That's okay. You can address it on the Friday.
Okay. Thank you. I've just been informed that that's tomorrow. I'm sorry, I'm just a little off there. Yes, sir. Okay. Okay. Thank you. The next slide addresses the Texas Success Initiative. We're at, thanks. It looks for 65% or more of our grades 11 scoring at 2200 or higher. And our ELA was at 40%, which was up by 1 percentage point. And math is at 41%, which had no change, so this is an area that probably could be looked at. We do have a lag behind the state. And this was, Dr. Murphy, when I took the job, I think these are the areas that you had told me that you were most concerned with and you wanted me to keep an eye on the most, where how ready were our kids for college readiness. And so this is the second slide, and it's showing for college readiness for the class of 2009, we are behind an ELA 39% to the state 62, math 40 to the state 60, and for both subjects, we're at 22% to the state's 47. However, again, given our population, and to keep in mind, our increases are right along with where the state's at.
Right, and through the chair, if I might, what this is, in board members, if you'll remember back to my interview to get this position, one of the things I pointed out is that the college readiness standards and college readiness, I'm talking about students that are scoring a 2200 on TAC, students that are passing the ACCUPLUS, students that are graduating with those types of accolades. We are one of the lowest in Region 19, if not the lowest, in this area. And I brought this out actually in my interview last year with this. And it was like when I saw it today when we were going through this, it just brought back all those memories. What this basically is saying is that even though a student might pass TACs, they're not passing it at a level that a college would be interested in. They're not passing it at a robust, high, like B or B-plus score. They're basically passing it, if they don't meet college readiness standards, at a C or a D level. They're getting across the line, but not at a college ready. And so what we're working on, and I think through our standards-based curriculum, through our PLC work, through our upgraded monitoring, through I-Corps, through the data mining that we're being able to do with Eduphoria, and we're able to target those objectives where the students are really struggling, I think we're going to see great gains this year, and not even next year, but this year when the scores come out in June, in these college readiness graduates. Because basically what happens is that you get a large group of students who the teachers, they pass the TACs, and so they don't get a lot of attention in the sense that they just pass. But now through these products that the board has generously given us this year to work with, we're now able to see, well, yeah, they passed the test, but look at the deficiencies within the scores. Look at the subscores. Look at objective 3. Look at objective 4. They're still struggling there. and we're able to target interventions in those areas. And so I really think we're going to see strong gains in these college readiness scores. These scores that you're seeing up here are exactly the scores I was talking to you about when I interviewed, these 22% college readiness scores. And these aren't even good compared to other districts in El Paso. These really need to come up, and I think we have the building blocks and the tools that are, you're going to see these gains this year. I'm very excited about that.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Murphy. Mr. Warren?
Thank you. My final slide deals with bio-intercriminal incidents here at Canatillo Independent School District. This information was not gathered through AEIS, but rather through reports here on the campus, from the campus levels, and the police department, I don't know, the security police, whoever it is that puts the reports together from the campus level. And it's just an aggregation of where we were in 2007, 2008, all the way through 2009 and 2010. Although the total incidents did go up from 2007, 2008 to 2008, 2009, there is a decrease again now from the 08, 09 to 09, 10. I really can't speak too much to this because I didn't get to pull it out of my favorite report that I've been living with for the last few days. And
The ratings?
That leads us to the 2009-2010 overall accountability results. For the district, were academically acceptable. Canatillo Elementary School is recognized. Bill Childress Elementary, recognized.
Thank you.
Wow. Good blank. Jose Damian,
thank you.
Exemplary. Dana Davenport, recognized. Garcia Elementary, academically acceptable. Aldenete Middle School, recognized. Canatillo Middle School, recognized. Canatillo High School, academically acceptable. And Natchez was recognized.
And also, it's not on here, but the entire district was AYP proficient, all campuses AYP proficient, and that is huge because we had not been able to say that for several years, and we were able to be that way. If you could go back to the slide. Looking at the base indicators that he was talking about, remember that on tax scores, we were recognized as a district, and on, what was the other one? There were three. Tax scores.
The base indicators,
dropout. Dropout, and then the third one was completion rate. No, dropout is not a base indicator. Yes. But anyway, the point is that it was simply that completion rate that kept the high school from being recognized, which then kept the district from being recognized. It was 78.2. We have to get to 81.6, or we're rounding it to 82. And we're very optimistic that the work that we were able to put in as soon as I got here in the springtime and in the summer is going to get us that mark. So if the scores stay even constant to how they were this year, and we increase that that completion rate, we should have a recognized district next year. And then we're very enthusiastic about it because we know that the scores are going to even increase this year.
Right.
And that concludes all the slides I have. Are there any other questions?
All right. Board? Questions for Mr. Warren? Dr. Murphy? All right. Mr. Warren, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Great job, Mr. Warren.
Thank you, Dr. Murphy.
All right.
Thank you, Annette.
Yes, Annette, thank you. All right, we are on agenda item 4, public hearing, our AEIS system. At this time, if the board has no comments or questions anymore, I will then invite the public to provide comment regarding the accountability report.
Not all
Look at all that public out there.
Get back. Mr. Coronado, I do
Ms.
have
Searles.
Some comments to make. it's just overwhelming to see our elementary campuses do so well.
Yep.
And especially with these gold performance acknowledgments. I mean, some campuses have 5, some have 6. It just really, it does my heart good to see that we're progressing and that we're such a wonder, yeah, we're a wonderful district. But with that in mind, I come to Garcia Elementary, which is our flagship, and they have 1 gold performance acknowledgement, and they're only acceptable, and I don't find that acceptable. So with that, I would surely like to see an improvement. I mean, that's unacceptable to me.
They misrecognize due to their science scores, and we're very much aware of that, and we are working very diligently in that.
But their gold performance acknowledgments are severely lacking. I mean, 1, when our other campuses are bringing in 5 and 6.
And one of the highlights of the scores that I really appreciate, we didn't talk about here, was we didn't really talk about TPM, Texas Projection Model, which lifted districts across the state to recognize an exemplary, and that was a big story and all that. Although I do firmly believe that TPM is based on very sound demography and demographics and statistics. One thing I think though is very important to point out is that BCE, Bill Childress, and DDE, Deanna Davenport, met recognized without any use of TPM at all. And they would have made it whether the governor gave that reprieve with the TPM or not. And I think that just needs to be publicly said that our Benton campus and our Westway campus hit recognized 1,000% without any assistance from the state. It's just fantastic.
Yep, I think it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Searles. Anybody else? And no more public, right? I guess we have no public comment. That takes us to
item 5, public report on progress in meeting highly qualified requirements. This is Fetz.
Good evening, Board President, Board Members, Dr. Murphy.
No, it's just a hand.
TEA and NICLB require that the district publicly make a statement prior to March 1st in regards to teacher quality. I'm pleased to inform you that all teachers teaching in the BOISD core academic subject areas are highly qualified. Likewise, our paraprofessionals with instructional duties, those that are in classrooms with students, are also highly qualified. Also required is that the report card for the NICLB report card be made available to the general public. As Mr. Warren has mentioned, it is posted on the internet under the district information section, so for you all to review. And in that report, at the very end, you will find the information on qualified teachers. Are there any questions on that?
Anybody?
Great.
Good job. Nothing?
Well, everybody's highly qualified. That was a huge issue a couple of years ago when the law first came out, and we had a lot of teachers across the entire nation, because this is federal. That